back with episode 802 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. How's everybody doing today?
Oh, just swimmingly after a couple weeks off. Wow, yeah.
I know.
We were actually caught up on the podcast feed, so there, you know, for once we were just catching up on that end. We're actually breaking a short hiatus for the podcast, folks. So, yeah, we are back, and we have a couple weeks' worth of material to go through, both in terms of activities that we've been involved in and a couple weeks' worth of episodic discussion to go through. So, yeah, nice busy week. So, as usual, Gary, we start off by talking a little bit about what we've been doing since the last time we recorded. Why don't we go ahead and start with you, so because I know that I have a lot to talk about. So.
Oh, okay. No problem. I'll try and keep it under one show length then. I finished up all three of the Star Wars Aftermath books finally. I plowed through the rest of those. And I was, you know, there's two tracks. There's sort of the overall history of what's happening, so you have a sense of how the Empire reached became the First Order. And then there's some interpersonal stories. And quite frankly, the interpersonal stories fell kind of flat for me. So I just sort of appreciated the larger sort of galactic story arc, if you will. And it was reasonable. It still didn't cover details that I wish they had. But it gave enough of a bare-bones sort of reasoning and escape for it. So I wouldn't say I felt rewarded for all the reading, but at least I feel informed. So I guess I'll call it that. And then to continue with my Star Wars marathon, I'm currently about a third of the way through Tarkin, which gives a very interesting look, actually, not only to Tarkin, but his almost peer relationship with both Vader and the Emperor, who he actually calls on a first-name basis. So, and no, he doesn't call him Emperor. But no, he actually calls him, I think, Sheev or something. You know, it's his real, you know, name that he had, you know, Sheev Palpatine. So, so he actually calls him by his first name, you know, not in formal events, but when they're alone. So it definitely sort of changes the whole dynamic for me of his importance in the, you know, the Empire as it existed at the time. So it's they're obviously taking liberties because this sort of level was never really explored like that before, but it seems to fit well with canon as such. So as long as they don't step on too many toes along the way, I think the setup's good. The writing is a little bit better for me than Aftermath. Although they literally had a 6-page description of Imperial uniforms, and I'm like, what? Where the little button is placed in the center of the belt buckle and matching the center of the hat. I'm like, somebody's really wanted you to have a clear picture of his uniform is all I can say. But it's coming going along and it's reading much quicker than any of the Aftermath books did. So that's a plus. And then I still have Thrawn waiting in the background for as soon as I finish Tarkin. So I definitely have more Star Wars reading in my immediate future. And speaking of reading, I'd love to get your opinion on it because I know you do read comic books, John, but it might not inflame your passions as much as it did mine with this whole Captain America brouhaha that continues to roll on. More and more, it's becoming more and more of a vocal sort of protest but on several different fronts, actually. I'm hearing now Jewish groups complaining. I'm hearing I actually heard people say how they could discredit someone who was supposed to be in the concentration camps, referring to Magneto as joining Hydra, which is so obviously Nazi. You have Marvel who's in some ways trying to say that no, the Hydra is not Nazi, even though within their own television shows their characters say so. It's in the case of Jenna Simmons in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's sort of interesting. Their sales numbers continue to drop for the series, and how they expect people to spend somewhere between $17 to $45 for this new Secret Empire series let me just throw in. We will spoil everything if you don't currently read Marvel comic books and or the Secret Empire miniseries that it's currently running. I do apologize, but I'm going to spoil this because it just sort of shocked me when Captain America took Bucky and put him up against a wall with a firing squad and killed him.
Huh.
And okay. So it left a little bit of a bad taste in this longtime comic book fan.
Yeah.
And Bucky did go out with the I'm sorry. I get them confused from time to time. I meant Rick Jones.
Oh, okay.
And he went out with Yeah, Avengers Assemble was his dying call. So while it was a very touching scene, the fact that Captain America himself actually ordered it, again, you know, even with, you know, cosmic cube possibilities to rewipe everything in reality, this is still really getting hard. And I, you know, I keep hearing these things that, oh, it's political allegory on, you know, the state of America now and stuff like that. But they are losing people left and right. And gosh, it's almost seems like they're breaking the toys, to use an analogy. And, you know, they do, of course, thousands of times the business in movies that they ever do putting out little pulp comic books. So the idea that they want that you would want Captain America, who's supposed to be this good guy in most of the public perception, coming across as one of the worst villains we've seen in a long time, is just very disheartening to me. And it just feels like they're, you know, breaking things. And I don't particularly enjoy that they're doing so. For the first time in a long time, I've chosen to not get books. And this is one of those times where I will not be purchasing any of the Secret Empire books. I really feel that they, any point they were trying to make has well been exhausted. And I'm not sure what the reasoning is behind this. They've, you know, put out press releases, as we said in our last few shows, that they wanted to, you know, hang in there. But hang in there means me spending an extra $40 to $60. And I don't know that I want to hang in there at that expense. So I'm going to take a break from Captain America, much as it, you know, bestows my heart. And, you know, as you know, John, I do admire the character. I even have a full uniform of him that I wear to conventions. So I'm very disappointed and disheartened that Marvel is continuing to beat this drum with this character. I wish they would just stop and, I don't know, just end this and move on. Maybe they pick up dollars by ending this and actually starting something else. I don't know, but I just hear more and more people disheartened by it. So we'll have to see what happens with that. So that's my big thing with comic books, at least as far as books go at the moment. Let's see, anything else? Oh, yeah, I saw a little movie over the weekend, and while we might not go into full discussions on it at this point, I did go see the second edition of Guardians of the Galaxy, or Volume 2, as they call it. And I will avoid spoilers because it's still pretty recent. However, I will say that it is worth going to see solely for Kurt Russell's acting. I don't want to say he stole the picture, because I felt it was a well-balanced picture among the characters, but at least for me, he's shown so well that I really don't, it's worth going even if you don't even like the other characters. Or, you know, I hear people, oh, geez, I don't like, you know, the way, you know, Gillen's acting as Nebula, so I don't think I want to see it. I would go see it just for him, even if you don't like 70s music, even if you don't like, you know, anything else. He did an amazing performance, and it's well worth seeing just for him. So
we can get into that in a moment, but you mentioned a couple things here that I was going to jump in on, but yeah, let's go back just for a moment.
Sure. Sorry, John.
Okay. No problem. Now I've given Marvel one of those passes that longtime fanboys inevitably do, right? I mean, I'm willing to hear, or I was willing to hear what they have to say. I didn't overreact too much to the whole idea of what was this whole, like, you know, Cap was always Hydra all along, because I figured there was going to be a plot reason for it, and that it would be relatively temporary, and there would be a point to it at the end of the day. And maybe that is the kind of, what's the word for it? You know, they have some kind of end game in mind, but the extent to which they are trying to drag people into accepting this, when it was in one book, maybe two, okay, if you don't want to deal with it, you could easily ignore it. But now they've got this huge event going on with it, and it really doesn't seem to make much sense. And I agree. I don't understand, and I haven't gotten to the point where, you know, I am, unfortunately, and I don't tend to like to do this, but I am speaking about this sight unseen, but just the descriptions that I've read and the fact that they've had to come out and say the blatantly obvious, which is just, you know, obviously the story is going to end in a good place or a place that you hope that it does, so, you know, go along the journey with us. On the one hand, I feel like exactly what you're saying, Gary, but I don't like this. If you're telling me now that you're going to basically fix this by the end, and how you're going to do that without breaking like a million rules of your own universe, I don't know. But okay, if you say you're going to fix this, fine, then maybe I can understand waiting it out, but at the same time I can wait it out on the sidelines. The only other thing that I could say is somewhat of a devil's advocate type of discussion, because I've seen some commentary that goes along the lines of, well, so as a company, you're expecting us to buy these books without, you know, any idea or just no idea whether or not we're going to like what it is that we're going to see. And as I was reading that, I was thinking to myself, boy, you, whoever wrote this must have grown up after the institution of, you know, the 4-6 issue trade collection thing started. Cause, I kind of remember going to the newsstand every week and picking up my stack of books and really not even knowing where in the world the story was going to go. You always bought the books on blind faith that you were just going to read a really cool story with the characters that you liked. You know, I remember when they had the whole Masters of Evil taking over the mansion thing in the Avengers.
Yeah.
And there was a huge brouhaha over the fact, like, how could it be so brutal and violent? You know, you just pulled this out of, you know, you just pulled this on us. And it was like, well, that was something that was always possible. The only difference now is that we have a huge internet social media presence, and you pretty much hear about story arc changes and story beats that are coming months in advance. And yeah, it's very rare for anybody to pick something up and really not have some kind of idea what it is that they're getting themselves into. And this is the bad side of it, really, because people now are going to basically say, screw it, I don't want to deal with this at all. So even if there was a long-term storyline that you are kind of being asked to follow, there's all kinds of information out there telling the people who may be wary of this exactly when to come back. Like, okay, you can ignore it until then. Okay, really? That's not, like you said, how is that helping the sales? How is that helping anything? You've alienated people already, and you've been doing it for a little while now. I really don't understand the business sense side of this argument. So, at the same time, I feel like it's a little bit of a facile argument to sit there and say, how dare you expect us to just pick stuff up without really knowing where things are going? It's like, that was the first 50 years of the business. I don't know what to tell you. You're clearly way too entitled a young mind. Because, yeah, back in the day, you picked up stuff in the X-Men, and there was a certain point, especially in the latter part of Claremont's run, where you had no idea what you were getting yourself into. Where it could take a good year or two just to know what the heck was going on. So, you kind of went along because you liked the characters, you liked the book, you trusted the creators. Maybe that's part of the problem, too. Did the creators in this case earn our trust enough for them to pull this kind of story and for us to believe that they're going to treat it with care? I mean, we're all aware of the fact that both Marvel and DC have had some storyline choices over the years that are questionable at best.
Well, you know,
one Avengers, like 200 or 300.
With Captain Marvel,
yes.
The female Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Yeah, where she was basically taken away to be raped and they sort of waved her well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and
by literally like her own progeny, too, which was, you know.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to confuse more people, but yes. Who was being possessed by a guy who had ascended to demigoddom or something like that. But, you know, and don't forget, Captain America is still reeling off of sort of Steve Rogers being replaced by Sam Wilson already. So the hero and his fandom were already, if not irate, definitely sort of raw over Captain America to begin with. Then to bring him back under these auspices is definitely, aggravating people. And
exactly.
And I want to be careful because by no means do I feel that heroes need to be so static that you can't take them in new directions, because then, you know, how many times can I watch Captain America hit the Red Skull in his face with his fist? You know, there's a finite limit to it, but
but to your point,
yeah.
They jumped through a lot of hoops in order to justify the initial change.
Yes.
And as long as it was something that was telling a specific point of a story, I could get it. But now they're taking it, I think, really far. And I think that's where people are really balking, because quite frankly, this whole thing is not new as far as Cap being a member of Hydra and all. That's been going on for, what, a year now?
Yes, it has. And, you know, there's been similar, much smaller arcs, meaning when I say smaller, like three episode things where he's brainwashed or something like that. And but never to this level. And maybe it's something about society with the level of violence that we consider acceptable nowadays that might not have been before. But still never to this extreme or this length. So,
yeah. I think that that's part of it, too, is that I was always waiting for, like, okay, this is probably, like, a year-long arc, right? Or this is going to be something that will be confined to Cap's book and then resolved in there. And in the meantime, they will make some commentary about, you know, how easily people can be seduced to these kinds of ideas and all this kind of stuff, because that's where it started.
Yes.
And I was fine with that. I mean, I didn't necessarily like that turn, but I understood what the goal was. Now I'm not so clear. Especially when people are sitting back and saying that whether they intend it or not, they are kind of like almost accidentally justifying like the Nazi regime. So that's not a good place for your writers to take you. And I do know that Nick Spencer, who I think is one of the people who's behind it, is known for being provocative. His book Morning Glories is pretty out there and is pretty challenging. So I don't know if he's trying to bring that same indie sensibility to what's going on and kind of really pushing the boundaries, but I think that when you take that and you contrast it, to bring it back to television where we usually talk, to what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing these days with their Agents of Hydra arc,
yes,
that seems to be treating the idea far better than what they're doing in the comic book.
And you would think that at this point, well, I'm not sure how Marvel is currently being run, you know, higher up, but I know, you know, DC is making a consistent effort to try and share ideas throughout their media, be it movies, you know, comic books or the like. And while it's odd because like, as you said, John, Marvel is in a sense doing the same concept in two different media. It feels like a completely different project, that there's no interaction yet. You know, at some level, somebody must have said, oh, hey, we're doing this. Hey, we're doing this too. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, but I agree with you that the television show has pulled it off much more effectively, even with and I look how they handle Fitz. You know, they are handling him as evil, but at the same time, he has these doubts. And geez, when he comes out of it, the man's so remorseful. Well, I don't want to jump to our discussions too much, but yeah, I mean, I felt they're handling the characters in a much truer fashion than the comic books are.
Yes, I think so at this point. And yeah, I really do wonder at what the intentions are. I hope that they can clarify that eventually, or that when they land on all of this, it will feel like, okay, this wasn't necessarily the best place they could have gone, but we're at least back on track in some way, shape, or form. If they can just retcon the hell out of the whole thing. I mean, I understand also, too, that at this point they've put a lot of investment in what they're doing, so I could understand why they're not going to do as some people are suggesting and just basically say, oh, we made a mistake, and boom, reboot. It's not really that kind of situation, I don't think. I don't think they could do that. That would be a PR nightmare even beyond what they're dealing with right now.
Yeah, you know, I thought when they technically killed Tony Stark at the end of Civil War, that was pushing it. But I'm really curious how they're going to get out of this one.
Well, I think it's like you said, they've literally used the Cosmic Cube thing like 7 times since the beginning of the story, back when they did the prelude to this whole thing and that like Pleasant Hill stuff or whatever it was like a year and a half ago. So, and keep in mind, I'm literally like 8 months behind now. So I'm not even begun on exactly where this is all going. I'm still at the point where at least the political and social commentary was making a bit of sense. So it could be way off the rails from where I'm sitting, but we'll see. We'll see. I'll also go back just a little bit further, because you were talking about Star Wars books, and one of the things that I've been doing, and I just finished it today, was reading the book Thrawn.
Should I look forward to it?
I believe so. In my estimation, it is the best of the new canon books.
That's encouraging, because I haven't been thrilled with them, so that's a good thing.
They've done a pretty good job of taking the sensibility of the character as we knew him and re-engineering it for where it would need to be in the new canon. He's recognizably Thrawn, and you even get... There was somebody who wrote a really nice blurb about it, and the way that they put it is that in the original trilogy of books with him, there were occasionally times when Thrawn would make observations and insights that seemed almost even magical,
mm-hmm.
in how amazing they were and out of the blue. Here you actually get the sense, a better sense of how he's doing things, and you get a much better look at his thought process, and I think it actually works out better.
Well, I mean, you have the benefit of the character's creator writing the book as well, so you know, that must help keep, I imagine, us a better sense of the character truer to his origins. Mm-hmm. With it being written by Zahn himself, you know, he's the one that created the character, so you know, hopefully, you know, the reboot, so to speak, of the characters hasn't affected the character's personality or outlook or anything like that, so the original creator can, you know, give us what we want to see in that character and not really change anything. So
yeah, exactly. Let's see here, did you want to say anything more about Guardians of the Galaxy brief, or
yeah, lots of cameos. They didn't try to recreate it. It isn't like a J.J. Abrams version take on the first movie or anything like that. But it felt it felt much more restrained. There was a looseness or a fluidity that seemed to be lacking. Not that I can say they were following steps 1, 2, and 3 like out of the first movie, but there seemed to be some sort of structure that they were definitely sort of going along with that hadn't existed in the previous movie. So it wasn't bad, but it was still wasn't what I hoped for. And honestly, I was slightly disappointed with the soundtrack. I was hoping they would have chosen some better songs. And there is one cameo by a I don't even know how to refer to him, by a former TV personality that just really left me scratching my head. I really didn't know why they needed to go there. And there really wasn't, as far as family friendly or anything like that, there really wasn't, wasn't any nudity. There was sort of slightly romantic notions, some hugging and stuff like that. Nothing crazy over the top. And I overall enjoyed the movie. I'd go see it again, but you know, if I was to give the first one a good 9 to 10, this one would be somewhere in the 8 range. So, but again, worth it just seeing for Kurt Russell. I would go and just watch his sections and be and feel like I was paid off. He was so effortless and smooth and just perfect perfect in the movie. Nebula. What's her name? Karen Gillan.
Yes.
Gillan did a much better job as Nebula in this movie than she ever did in the first one. Where in the first one, I almost felt like I was seeing Amy Pond, or at least some version of that sort of just come through slightly. She was just very well immersed in the character, you know, definitely where you could suspend disbelief and, you know, feel that you were watching that character. And it was a much more enjoyable experience for seeing that character. And I'm trying to think of anything else. Oh, and if you don't like Groot by the end of this movie, you are just heartless. There's just they threw out every cute factor you could possibly imagine.
I imagine they did.
And when you get to one of the... Well, should there be extra credits on it? And you know, I guess you might have to wait and see if there are. But if there are, and you should happen to see Groot in one of them, know that I am living that life right now with my teenager. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure that puts a lot of things in perspective for people.
So definitely go see it. I chose to see it in 3D. I don't know they did enough to make it really worth seeing in 3D. There was a small scene with Yondu's arrow that came close to us, some boulders and like, you know, space rocks flying around, but very little seemed like, you know, that it definitely would benefit, or you really should consider seeing it in 3D. I think a 2D showing would be perfectly fine for it, and I don't feel it particularly benefited from it.
Yeah, we're seeing it in 3D IMAX, so I guess we'll see how it goes. But
You're still gonna like it. But I'm just saying, it's just there's some movies just the way they're filmed or whatever that you want them in a three dimensional adds a significant bit extra to the movie. And this one, I didn't really see that. Oh, and as a side note, and most people aren't going to realize this, but towards the end of the movie, and you'll see you'll probably know what I mean. Another former TV slash movie, no, rather movie personality, also makes a cameo in it. And at one point, they're showing him along with four other characters. And for those of us who are really long-term, diehard comic book fans, you will see that they're actually portraying the original Guardians of the Galaxy from the comic book.
Ah, nice.
And I thought that was so sweet. I went, oh, so nice. And of course, people look at me left and right, clueless. But that's fine. I like that they threw in that little caveat for, you know, for the diehard comic book fans that was like, oh wow, hey, there's Charlie, there's so and so. So that was a nice touch to throw in there. So I was happy to see that. And the villain was a bit mustache twirling, I suppose, but it held up for the movie.
Okay, cool. Yeah, non-spoiler discussion for right now because we haven't seen it. So when everybody on both sides has managed to get their exposure to it, we will speak more in detail. For me, the big thing recently, and I won't go too far into it, is that I was last weekend, along with myself and the Spawn, down in Lancaster, PA for ZenkaiCon. I believe it was the 10th year for that. But
did you go in costume?
Yes, we did.
And what were those costumes?
Okay, well... essentially, we were only there one full day, and that day was Saturday, which was, I believe, the 29th of April. The 29th of April is the in-canon birthday of Gendo Akari, the father of Shinji Akari in Evangelion.
Yes.
So because it was that, you have to do something a little bit interesting with your cosplay sometimes. So I literally did a Gendo cosplay wearing a birthday hat on my head.
Very nice.
Yes, it was very nice, especially since once I announced those intentions, even though my son took a completely different cosplay, he was like, Dad, tell me, did you bring the stuff for Shinji just in case you wanted to do a different one? And I was like, yeah, I did. And he's like, can I please cosplay that and we can do Gendo and Shinji. And I was like, this could be fun. Sure, we can do that. And so, yes, we did a nice little cosplay double act for all day on Saturday of basically it being my birthday and, you know, him being the disappointing son and so forth. And he played it up to the hilt. And in fact, we discussed it. At first, we were only going to do that in the morning, but he was having so much fun with people recognizing who it was supposed to be and getting a huge laugh out of the way that we were playing things up that he was like, I'm going to lay down for a little bit, but when I get up, I want to go back out in the same stuff because I would just want to basically do this all day. So, yeah, he was having a great time. He thought that it was a lot more engaging to be part of it, I guess you could say, because in the past he's been kind of irritated when he's not cosplaying and, you know, people stop to take pictures and he's like, that's not really my thing if I'm not actually doing it. But with the with us both doing something together, he was a lot more into it. So that helped a lot. Didn't get a whole lot of stuff. But it just being, away for the weekend was kind of nice.
Now, did you see any other, interesting cosplays, or were there any guests of note at the convention? Or
there's always guests there, but to be honest, I don't remember exactly who they were because I knew we were only there pretty much for the one day and then a little bit on Sunday, and I didn't really get too involved with the guest list. For me, the big draw for this one is that there are a lot of the East Coast-based VOG network hosts that show up at the con.
Cool.
So, in fact, there was a picture that Adam from Anime Jam Session put up at the end of the weekend of a bunch of us that, later in one of the evenings when the Spun were in the hotel room. And it was a bunch of us, and he even put up there that they're representatives of at least three shows on the network. So us, Anime Jam Sessions, and Crystal Chronicles, which is a Sailor Moon podcast that runs every so often.
Sweet.
When that show is on. So there were at least those three, and then there were people who were kind of associated thereby with especially Anime Jam Session that were there. So it was pretty cool to have that many people, on this side of the pond, or not side of the pond, but on the continent, I guess you could say, that that's when we can get together, because yeah, we are, a bunch of us are at Anime Next in Atlantic City, but we don't really get together per se. It's just when, you know, because they're not really there for the whole weekend. But this is kind of the one where they make this their kind of go-to destination every year, because it is a relatively small, kind of isolated type of con. I mean, there's only probably a few thousand people at most. It's not big by any means. You can pretty much see everything that you want to see, do everything you want to do, run into a lot of people with some pretty cool cosplay. But it's more down to earth, I guess you could say, and everybody is very friendly. It's not one of these bigger ones where you wind up feeling like you're kind of lost in the crowd.
Yep.
You run into a lot of people over and over again. One of the fun things was that Friday night when we got in, you know, we were watching stuff in the room, and then they decided to go to sleep. And I went down, and there was a really late night Evangelion panel, which was basically just a bunch of, you know, super nerds sitting in the, it was essentially a fan panel, like something that you would have at Dragon Con. But, you know, maybe not quite as organized as that. But clearly it was an 11 o'clock at night type panel where it's like, the people in this room are probably half exhausted, maybe a bit drunk. You know, just, we're going to have fun talking about this. And there was a Shinji and Asuka couple that was there. And, you know, when the panel revealed themselves to, quite wrongfully, being a Rey-centric panel, you know, of course, the Asuka cosplayer got a little bit perturbed and felt a bit, shall we say, ganged up on. And so, you know, there were, you know, myself and a couple others that backed her up. And it was all in good fun. But then the nice thing was, is that, you know, I mentioned at the end of the panel, I was like, hey, if you see a Gendo walking around with a birthday hat, that'll be me. And the next day she was playing or cosplaying someone else completely. And just happened to pass along in the hallway and turned around and was like, yeah, hey, it's you. And it was like that kind of recognition that, like, you run into people all weekend that you, you know, go to panels with, or you know, just go and in the dealer's room, you'll see them all the time. And, you know, there was one person who was working one of the dealer's tables that then saw me in the elevator later and recognized, you know. So that was kind of cool. It's that kind of very small, but everybody's staying there and having a good time type of con. I think Adam put it best by saying that it felt like a con before they became popular, like back in the 90s, you know, early 2000s kind of thing, where it's like the original intent, which was to have people who are really into what they're doing and into the community all gathering in one place rather than being a popularity contest or something, you know? So, yeah, it's definitely a nice down-home, you know, relatively local one. It's not too well known. And there's a lot of word of mouth of who goes there, which I think also helps. And yeah, it's quickly becoming one of our favorite annual events.
Nice. So. Yeah, it is nice. Sometimes, you know, cons can get so huge and out of a comfort level. And so that's nice to hear that you found a nice niche.
Yes, exactly. So let's see, there's a couple other things here on the news list that I thought was of interest. And yes, the first one I have here is that, unfortunately, I'm guessing because of the poor box office returns for it, for the third movie rather, it seems like Star Trek IV is not as guaranteed as we were being led to believe. I guess even though they are working on a script as they said that they are and so on, even to folks like Zachary Quinto are saying that it's not a given. And, geez, what do you think of that? I mean, one movie doesn't quite perform, and especially one that wasn't overly well advertised and promoted to begin with, and now we're potentially looking at the end of the movie franchise again?
Hold on one moment. Let me grab my soapbox quick. Okay, and...
okay, go ahead. Hold on. Yeah, yes. I know it's over in the corner.
Yep. Okay. I got it. I haven't had it dusted off in at least two or three episodes. So,
go for it.
CBS has been mismanaging Star Trek for nearly 5 to 7 years now. The fact that they even managed to put out a movie is somewhat surprising to me. It's been fraught with problems and delays, even in the movie franchise, let alone the TV franchise. Their idea to continue to ape the original series movies, I think, has not only brought a question of why should I go see this when it was done better before. also, it's just people want to see something original, and I get the sense that recasting is not the original aspect that people are really saying. I'm not saying that they're adverse to the actors themselves, but what I'm saying is that they want new stories, and the tagline that that CBS and Paramount kept putting was that, oh, this is going to be, you know, like Star Trek for the 21st century. And it's really not turning out to be that. Yes, there's a little bit more action. Don't get me started on the lens flares. And we have a younger cast that can obviously be more mobile and do things that our older cast members are not physically able to do, which is fine and dandy. But it all comes down, as we always say, John, it comes down to story. You could have, you know, one guy standing under a spotlight on the screen and he can deliver an amazing performance, and you know, you'll keep it with you forever. And you could have 100 people with multi-million dollar budget and you forgot about it by next week. And we're just not getting good stories, good original stories out of the movie franchise. And I think people realize that, and they're not that interested in seeing it, at least definitely not the rabid Star Trek fan that they hope is the core of their base. And I don't think they do a general service to the general audience, because you know they do want to see new and exciting things, and they're not getting that either. Star Trek people may not be able to name the last five ships that or what years they were launched in Star Trek. But, of course, most people realize who Captain Kirk is or have a general idea who Spock is, or, heck, even McCoy. But so, I mean, there's sort of a cultural landscape that people are familiar with the characters. So to retread them doesn't help anybody, because these people already know you need something to draw them in, and they're not being drawn in. And I agree with you. Their marketing budget, both for the last movie, as heck, even for the 50th anniversary, which you thought they'd tie into a little stronger, was laughable. And, I think they're showing that, what they're putting into it is what they're getting out of it, which isn't much. I really think they could do a good Star Trek movie, and with, current production standards, and even if they wanted to scale back some of the, special effects and stuff like that, I think they could still come out with an amazing movie, under budget. And but I don't think they know where they want to go. And now, of course, this is the fourth movie, so hey, we're going to do time travel, just like the fourth movie of the original series. And so, yes, and while there will probably be some variations on themes, that's sort of my point. All they're doing is, aping or mimicking, and it people don't want to see it. Oh, yeah, they're traveling back in time. Oh, yeah, I remember when they did that before. And you won't get, I'll wait till it's, till it's on Netflix. And
there we go. And don't get me started on the self-defeating.
Well, I agree, but I'm saying if they made something good, people would be knocking on the door to get out and go see it. And they're it doesn't feel to me like they're doing that. I mean, even if you want to look at their aftercare fans, they put out the DVDs with all the different edited scenes out, specials, features, and stuff like that. And an average fan has to buy four DVDs to get all the extras and everything like that.
That whole nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, but this is just, this is just another kink in their thought of the fans as cattle that they can milk. And they can't just do that. They have to put out good stuff. It's not just enough to rehash things or, anything with that they throw the word Star Trek on is going to make multi-millions of dollars. That's not the case. And in some ways, with possibly the exception of the early 90s for a few years, that's never been the case. Star Trek has always had to put out good quality stuff to draw it in. I'm reminded of the original first movie that they spent millions of dollars on, an extremely expensive budget for its day, and it bombed and tanked horribly. And so what'd they do? They said, okay, we'll do a second movie and we're going to do it bare bones. It's going to be low special effects. It's going to be a lot of just, people talking. And it was one of their best, best received, highest money making features, which has almost helped to not only redefine the movie series, but in some senses, the genre to a large extent with what Nicholas Meyer introduced in Wrath of Khan. And it's definitely made its way into popular culture as well, and rightly so. It's a good movie. But that's the thing where I'm saying, okay, they realized what they were trying to do didn't work, and they made a drastic change, and it was very drastic. And that's the type of direction they need to take again. They need to take a risk This isn't the heyday of the 90s when we had, two Star Trek TV series and a movie going every 2 years, where literally the Star Trek franchise employed over, something like 1,200 people. This isn't that anymore. They've purposefully decided to destroy all that and basically start from scratch. And so now they're in trouble as far as I'm concerned. And if you don't take risks or make change, nothing will change. So I'm hoping they take some more drastic steps. If it's any way like they seem to be handling the TV franchise, I don't think they will. And I think it's going to die on the vine. And, we had all this talk back in the day after Enterprise died. Oh, Star Trek needs to rest. It didn't need to rest. It needed to be invigorated. And they haven't done so. I'll step down now.
I'm just going to say that I definitely get the feeling that Into Darkness was unfortunately the kind of movie that started off with a not so bad reputation, and it was the film that just did not hold up. And I feel like, for better or worse, Beyond took the brunt of that. It's like when, it's not so true anymore because of the way that things are parsed out with online and digital viewing and so forth. But, back in the day, you could reliably look at the ratings and say, this number that just came out is an accurate reflection of what last week's reaction, or the reaction to last week's episode, or the last episode was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that's not the case here. Because I don't think Beyond was nearly so bad of a film as its box office suggests. I think of the three, it might actually be the best of the three. And the most Star Trek-like of the three.
I agree. I think the muddying of the waters with calling Cumberbatch Khan, I think, was probably the worst sin. But yeah, I agree that it did have merit, yes.
Yes. So I don't know that... What I'm worried about is that they're taking the wrong lessons from the fact that the box office was what it was. But at any rate, it would really be, I would really kind of find it unfortunate if a movie franchise that seemed to kick off really well, that did a really nice job of bringing in a bunch of new eyeballs to the franchise, that at least had a lot of potential to drive in some new and exciting directions, it would die on the vine this quickly. That said, I understand that the cast is very much in demand, but it would be unfortunate. Kind of like, man, I really wish Nemesis hadn't necessarily killed the Next Generation film franchise the way that it did. But there you really needed two films that were underperforming creatively in order for that to happen. But at any rate. So, that being the case, don't want to dwell on that too much, but in related news, Discovery's back on the schedule.
Yeah. Let's not have all by Star Trek discussion be negative. That is great news. They've announced that they have pulled back. No, sped up. Regardless, it's going to be debuting in the fall of 2017 instead of sometime in 2018, which was the previously announced quasi date. So that's encouraging. They announced, I believe they announced one or two new actors as well that are going to be coming to the series. They announced particularly, let's see, I don't want to butcher names. They announced that Rekha Sharma will be joining as Commander Landry, the Discovery security officer. I don't know if we mentioned it, but Rainn Wilson will be coming on as Harry Mudd. And they did already mention that Jason Isaacs will be a captain of the captain of the show, even the series, even though that it is not a captain focused show, they tell us. So definitely some positive news coming out of there. They still are staying in their internet delivery mode, though. They have not changed or decided that they want to actually air it on TV other than the first episode. So It is still a pay-to-view show, and that hasn't changed. And so we'll have to see what else happens. Of course, we're supposed to get Vulcans, Klingons. I'm holding out hopes for Andorians, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, let's find out what happens.
I said,
it's going to happen the way, well, the way that this is telling it, but okay.
Yeah, there is. I mean, all things said and done, there's still so little news coming out of this production. You almost scratch your head and say, are they doing anything up there, out there? Because compared to previous series where they'd be, I'll use the word pimping it to all, to all its glory. We would have had magazine articles. We would have had, behind the scenes shootings, or even if it didn't show actual sets, you'd see behind the sets, or you'd see, more actors like in covering their uniforms in robes or something and chit-chatting with people. We're getting nothing. I won't rehash all the issues with this, but it just feels like you want to be promoting this show. You want to promote the heck out of it. And you're like hiding it like it's some like secret to be revealed at some point, when no, you need to build groundswell. You want people to pay to pay money every month to watch your network and see this show. You need to push it. This isn't something somebody's going to accidentally flip on their TV. They have to sign up, join, and pay you to watch it. So you need to you need to build some sort of groundswell. Maybe they'll come up with something. But as we've talked, John, who's ever doing promotion for this franchise right now is asleep at the wheel, so I don't expect much. It's supposed to be a 13 episode season. I will be surprised if we get all 13 at this point.
Really? You think so?
Well, Brian Fuller made didn't mince his words that they were trying to do this show so cheap. That he didn't feel that was one of his things that pulled him off of it, that he didn't feel he could do it justice with the budgets that they had. They're bringing in some reasonably named star people, and I got to imagine that has to cost them money. And so if they're throwing this much money into the cast, I'm concerned, how much they have to push around and where it's going to end up going. We'll have to see. Typically, Star Trek usually came out of, I don't want to say nobody's, because many of the stars did have, had very good careers leading up to being on the series, but generally they weren't well known. And you're getting, several well known people that are coming onto this. And so it's got to cost them extra money. And for a show that's going on the cheap, I find it hard to believe, unless the ratings go through the roof, that the studio is going to want to keep their own money into it. Maybe they'll shoot them all at once, I hope.
Yeah, you never know. I'm hoping so. I'm hoping that it just kind of...
But if I hear like a...
schedule, yeah. And now that they've given a tentative window, that's a good sign.
Well, but here's the thing, John. They don't have... there's no commitment to a network. There's no commitment to advertisers, really, with airing on the internet. So you have sometimes things that might have pushed a show to happen, even if you had to have a clip show at some point during it, that would make something happen every week, does not have to happen in this case. There's no hole in the schedule to fill. There's no, the advertisers, if they don't, they're not getting, the number of TV viewings that, TV viewership on this. So, it's not a high platform, so to speak. So, nothing would stop them from going on hiatus at episode 6 and never seeing them again. So, anyway, I said I'd keep it positive, and I didn't, so I apologize. But I do want it to succeed, but it just I don't see signs of it. So we'll have to wait and see. I'll go sit by the rack of dilithium crystals and wait.
All right.
Do we get any good news, John?
Did we get any good news? Well, I thought that the Discovery thing was good news, but there we go. We had some good news. We had a few good topics here. I'm just going down the list here. David Goyer and Eliza Dushku are developing the Black Company books from Glenn Cook. That's pretty cool.
That is.
It is pretty neat. Sylvester Stallone is going to be the lead in the development, the movie in development of Starlight, which was a pretty nice miniseries, as I recall, from Mark Millar. I'm pretty stoked for those things. So, yeah, those are good pieces of
those are, yeah, that is a lot, yeah, better. Yep.
I'll take those as a nice way to round out this episode. And in fact, next time we're going to be getting into the first of 2 weeks worth of episodic discussion. As we all know, that can be pretty enlightening in terms of certain opinions and so forth. But any last thoughts on the news before we wrap this one up?
No, I think I've talked more than enough for this episode.
All right, then. We're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. And when we come back, it'll be episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.